special session committee on budget restoration to order, December 10th. We will have, bill inspection. I will invite, certain testimony up. I will open the, court session on LC 19-1, otherwise known as the, National Settlement Account. Staff.
Chair, LC 19-1 is the, master settlement, revenue stream, committing a portion of that, for some, available revenue in the 0103 biennium. I did, make copies of our projected revenue stream, titled Master Settlement Agreement Payment, and the last column has the projected stream, what we think will come in. That was, some numbers you talked about last night. The draft itself is, based on model legislation that has been drafted in a number of states, and Treasury is here so they could talk briefly about that, how it's laid out. I did want to call your attention to two main policy decisions that are blanks in the bill. On page 6, it says on line 23 there's a blank for to generate blanks in net proceeds. That, of course, is a key number that you'll be using in your 0103 balance plan. So that is blank, and you'll have to fill that in your work session consistent with the plan. And a related issue, the amount that you put in there affects the maturity and how long you're going to be.
Excuse me. Do we have a consensus in the committee that we cannot allow the drinking of tall lattes? short lattes is fine.
Oh, wait, we have. I need this agreement for you to share.
It is a gender thing. Excuse me, Paul.
Okay. The other related policy decision for you is on page 11, line 8. There is a. On the line, it limits the maturity commitment of the revenue stream. So the more dollars that you commit to this biennium, the more you're going to pull up front from the revenue stream, the longer you'll have to commit the revenue stream. So those two are connected. You may also recall, Treasury Fed Manager told you last night, that the longer you go out on that stream, you do the higher the interest rate you pay. There's an upward slope in interest rate curve, so you maintain a higher rate the longer out you go.
Any questions, staff? I think we've heard this before. Let me invite Kate and Chuck up to discuss some of the particulars. Sign in, please.
For the record, Kate Richardson, Oregon State Treasury.
And Chuck Smith with the Oregon State Treasury.
You now have a graph here in front of you, I assume, that explains or helps you understand a little bit what we were talking about last night. What this does is create a public corporation, the instrumentality of the state to conduct this transaction. And as we mentioned last night, that's what has been done in the many other states that have gone before us in with this sort of transaction.
Yes, I think.
And I believe that you're getting to a copy of some projections and numbers we've had run with a firm we work with, and it's based on an assumption of $200 million in proceeds and a five-year maturity. And Chuck can talk to you about those numbers right now.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, hopefully this little sheet that I passed out here.
For the record.
For the record, I'm Chuck Smith with the Oregon State Treasury. And hopefully this sheet sort of lays out what we were talking about last night and includes some key numbers that we didn't have in our possession at that moment. And for instance, I suppose one of the key numbers to take a look at here is the cost of funds. We're, in this particular transaction configured this way, we'd be looking at 3.87% as an interest rate. That would be the cost of funds. This transaction would produce, as Kate just mentioned, $200 million in net proceeds. The assumption is that it would be issued in the early spring 2003 and have a final expected maturity date of 2008 and a final rated maturity date of 2009. What's interesting to note is that, one, it has a reserve fund that's required by the marketplace, and at the top of the page here, several numbers down, you see the reserve fund is $56.5 million. That reserve fund could actually be used to make the payment in the final or fifth year, so that really what you would wind up with is use of the lottery revenues for 4 years. This payment would be made in the fifth year. However, no lottery revenues could really be released until a final payment is made and the obligations of the corporation are filled at the end of the fifth year.
Okay.
So, excuse me.
Not lottery.
Did I say lottery?
We've got
I mean tobacco. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong time. Oh, wrong sheet. For the record, that was Kate Smith who said that. I apologize. It's tobacco revenues. So here's some of the numbers laid out, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on the
Great.
Financial side.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Thank you. Chuck, the cost of funds is not just interest, then that includes the cost of issuance and the original issue premium, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, that's correct. This 3.87 takes into account the $263 million being borrowed at the top of the page.
If you back out the cost of issuance and the original issue premium, what's the actual, if you were to convert that, if you were to back that out, what's the effective interest rate on the on the amount borrowed, on the proceeds? It would be less than 3.87, I assume, if those are part of the cost of issuance.
Representative Shetterly, I apologize. The question is if you back out cost of issuance and original issue premium. Well, if you pay the same amount of interest and you reduce the amount of proceeds, your interest rate would go up slightly. But what we are figuring here is the total cost, which is the 3.87%.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair, also I want to point out that the average remaining revenues down there at the bottom of the page is anticipating the earmark for OHSU debt service on the general obligation bond.
Representative Johnson.
Hey, would you say that again? I just want to make sure that I understand it. That's the $17 million at the bottom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, that is indeed. That would be the remaining stream to on the MSA proceeds to the state, and that has been earmarked to go to pay debt service on the general obligation bonds for OHSU, and that is an insufficient amount to do so.
I apologize for making this so elementary. The amount for the OHSU is $17 million, is it not?
I think the original calculation, President Johnson, was maybe $15.8 million, $16 million. We want to make sure and have enough to pay the debt service.
You just answered my question. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, if we were to raise the amount of the proceeds by $15 million, do you have any way to gauge what the numbers would look like that you gave us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, what I think essentially would happen here is you would extend this out 1 year. The par value would be about $320 million proceeds would be about $250 million. Reserve would go up a little bit to about $60 million. Cost of issuance is 1% of your par value, as you can see from these numbers. So your cost of issuance would go up a little bit to be commensurate with the $320 million that you're borrowing. And original issue premium would go up slightly. The cost of funds would go up to about 4%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A related question in the opposite direction. You drop it to $100 million. Could you not only pay this off at a lower interest rate, but also would you be allowed to pay it off in, say, 3 years instead of 5 years if you decided to pay at this rate? And could you calculate those figures roughly?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, it's easier to go the other way, but
depends on your point of view sometimes.
From a financial calculation point of view, what happens is, first of all, we've got to be aware that we don't have access to cash flow to pay these particular asset sales off until April 2004, because all the cash flow is spoken for in the triennium. So you're going to have to capitalize interest. You don't get your hands on cash. So when you start, it would be shorter, but I don't think it would be proportionally shorter here. Interest rates would be somewhat lower than this, say 15 basis points lower, something like that.
So, Mr. Chair, follow-up question. So basically, it's wise to do at least for 5 years, no matter how you cut this thing, no matter what the number is.
This is the optimal format for short-term financing right here.
So 5 years, and the number's smaller, yeah. Really the best way to go.
Right.
I understand. Thank you.
I guess to give us the context of the in the national picture here, how many states have done these MSA transactions like this? And I guess I would ask, what's the range of proceeds that states have gone for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetter, I think you testified to that last night.
Representative Shetterly, there's been a series of states, and I read them last night. Maybe I just quickly read them again.
You don't need to read them, just how many.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In about 9 states, there's been about 25 to 30 other issuers besides states. Some of the larger issues have been Wisconsin, and I think maybe about $1.6 billion. California is anticipating a very large sale after the first of the year. Washington State's contemplating about $500 million. New Jersey sold over $1 billion. Other counties and whatnot have sold $100 or $200 or $500 million as well.
Any other questions for Treasury? I guess just in terms of when you factor in cost of funds, capitalized interest, issuance, original issue, is there a point at which it just doesn't pencil out from a debt management perspective to go out for you wouldn't do this for $25 million. Is there a point at which there's an equilibrium where it just doesn't pay to go out for a certain floor amount?
Well, Representative Shetterly, most of the tobacco transactions have actually been rather large in size. Large size is gets good market reception because these are purchased by primarily mutual funds, other institutional investors that are looking for large size. So if you scale it down too much, you may wind up proportionally paying a little bit higher interest if you wanted to borrow, say, $35 million or something like that. It'd probably be worthwhile to find another way to do that.
But I think his question. Go ahead.
Well, I guess my question: Would you consider 200 or 250? Is that a respectable amount for the purpose of the issuance, for the purpose of the market? Is it?
Yes, Representative Shetterly. Yes, yeah. Good amount.
Okay.
Let me remind the committee: we're trying to get this to the floor.
Okay, right.
So it can be read, so we can get it back, so we can work the bill.
Are they waiting for us?
Yeah. One more question, Representative Bates.
And you can anticipate this one, of course, Mr. Chair. Is $100 million enough to be an equitable amount that's reasonable to take out?
representative base. That's, there's been other issuers that have done $100 million.
Thank you.
No more questions for the thing.
Yeah.
Gee, that's a good idea. Any other discussion for staff? Any questions? Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I move LC-19-1 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Morgan has moved LC-19-1 as committee bill. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys agree in the mail.
Yeah. We will open a hearing on LC-26. Mr. Warner.
Chair, LC-26 should look familiar to you because it is identical to LC-17. What it does is impose an increase in income tax rates for a three-year period, beginning with the 2002 tax year and running through the 2004 tax year. What the measure does is, but it does not contain language in it for a November referral. It takes effect 91 days after passage and signature that again.
Thank you. Now, as I shut everyone down in the conversation regarding a straight-up vote last night, it's your turn to go crazy. However, I will remind the committee we're trying to get this out. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I think the discussion last night was adequate.
We have settle these over, but legitimately to the committee, if anyone wants to extol the virtues of straight up versus referral, here's your chance.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Neville.
I'm not taking that entry. I'm just doing my typical introduction of this bill with no statement of support or opposition. I'll ultimately determine that when it comes back to the committee.
But we don't even have a motion.
Oh, I know. Just for the record.
I believe that statement could go for the entire committee.
Absolutely. Let's move it out.
Obviously, a small correction.
I did say that it's still identical, but looking through it, it does contain language that you had discussed briefly last night about waiving penalties that may be due to underwithholding. So that language appears in this LC draft and was not in the original LC-17 draft. So that gives you a sense of what that language is going to look like and would be applicable to either draft.
Okay.
Is there any motion, Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
To make a motion to move LC-26 to the floor of the bill.
Representative Bates has moved LC-26 introduced as moved that we introduce LC-26 as a committee bill. Again, I believe speaking for the entire committee, indicating no level of support or opposition. Is there any other discussion? Is there any opposition? Let the record show, Senator Caden is opposed. Any other opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. We will recess the committee to the call of the chair. I have no idea when we're going to be back, but I can guarantee you we will.